Hello and welcome to the Doorsteps Podcast. I'm Dr. Cody Price, and I would like to introduce you all to my guest today, Nate Kaufman, who is the Executive Director of the Ohio CDC Association, a nonprofit trade association for community development corporations that work to revitalize rural and urban communities. Prior to joining the Ohio CDC Association in December 2009, Nate directed the revitalization efforts of Cleveland's historic Ohio City neighborhood with the Ohio City Near West Development Corporation. For 8 years, he served as executive director of the Home Builders Association of Greater Cleveland. While there, Nate helped bring the organization and the membership to invest and develop in many underserved urban neighborhoods, working in partnerships with local CDCs. He also worked several years in Columbus for U.S. Senator John Glenn and as an aide at the Ohio Senate. He is a native of southeastern Ohio and a graduate of The Ohio State University. Nate serves on the board of directors for the National Alliance of Community Economic Development Associations. So I want to thank you for coming in today.
Thank you very much for having me, Cody.
Of course. So before we kind of dive in and starting to really talk about the proposed reform of the Community Reinvestment Act, can you kind of tell us a little bit about the Ohio CDC Association and what is really the purpose of this association?
Sure thing. So the Ohio CDC Association, we are a membership organization, as you cited. We exist explicitly to build the capacity of our members. We have about 265 members that work in everything from affordable housing to local food access to economic development across the state. They are our community champions, and we are here to support them in capacity through a variety of different programs and also through advocacy efforts, which is what we're here to talk about today.
Great. Before we kind of get into the proposed reform aspect of the Community Reinvestment Act, can you kind of speak about what is the Community Reinvestment Act and really how did it get started?
Sure. So we need to go back well in time to the 1930s, where an explicit practice known as redlining started, which would literally be taking a red pencil, I suppose, in those days. I don't know if they had magic markers, and cutting off, designating areas kind of investment free or lending free. And predominantly, these neighborhoods were African American. So redlining was predominantly based on race. There are also some examples of where it was based on religion and income, but predominantly as a tool to disenfranchise the African American community. That practice just devastatingly continued into the 1970s until the passage of the Community Reinvestment Act in 1977.
And so what has really been the impact of the Community Reinvestment Act since its inception?
So many would say, and I don't think this is hyperbole, but if no CRA, no community development, we're talking about decades and decades in disinvestment. And just put it in, frame it in terms of 1 year, the National Community Reinvestment Coalition has estimated that the 25 largest banks in America, that their average CRA investments, loans, equity investments, and grants, et cetera, tally about $35 billion a year. The total amount of investments is somewhere, I believe, in the neighborhood of $2 trillion. And the CRA has done a tremendous amount of good in that time in providing access to capital, fair and equitable access to capital. But obviously, if you're talking about multi-generations of disenfranchisement, this tool needs to be enhanced, not weakened, which unfortunately is what is happening today.
So you were kind of talking about the $35 billion. Is that in Ohio or is that nationally? Or what are kind of the Ohio-specific numbers with the...
Well, so that's $35.6 billion in average CRA investments across the country.
Okay.
It's a big number still when you say across the country every year. To give you a sense of the consequences of negative reform, that if there were just a modest decrease in CRA investments, let's say 10%, a 10% decrease in investments in Ohio only would equal $1 billion in lending leaving our communities over a five-year period. So for every 10% decline in Ohio of CRA investments, you would see $1 billion less over a five-year period exiting our state and exiting states across the country.
So can you kind of give more of a brief overview of these proposed changes that are in the reform?
Sure, sure. So I'm going to give just a very broad overview because we're talking about a 240-page proposed rule. And I think it's important to note, you know, where this is coming from. So the Comptroller Otting, who's the Comptroller of the Currency, the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, came to D.C. a few years ago as a Trump appointee, and he's been very public about it. He came to Washington to do CRA reform. And so in terms of what they have proposed against a mass flood of public comments to the contrary, I'll put those in three quick buckets, if that works for you.
Yeah.
So what counts? So right now, you know, community reinvestment is intimately tied to community development, to mortgage lending, to small business lending in these LMI census tracts. What counts under the proposal would be items wholly unrelated to community development and the health of the communities. For instance, stadiums. Any stadium in a opportunity zone would count as credit. The West End FC Cincinnati Soccer Stadium is an example that would have qualified. Infrastructure, things along those lines. Mortgage-backed securities, things that are gonna make it easy for banks to achieve compliance while actually not fulfilling the intent of the CRA. Second bucket is how it counts. And this would put in an overly simplified scoring system that they're calling the single metric. And it would value large deals over small, community-focused, community-centric investments. So in essence, it disregards the needs of the local communities. There was a recent study that came out of the Philadelphia Federal Reserve that said without CRA investment, there would be a substantial reduction and the supply of mortgage credit in LMI neighborhoods. Thirdly, and last bucket, and please keep in mind to all listeners, this is oversimplification because there's a lot of other things in this proposal, but just want to give you a sense of three. It would allow, thirdly is where it counts, where it counts. So right now, as would make sense, you know, CRA, and looking at the bank's footprint, looking at LMI communities, the proposal would allow banks to disregard up to 50% of their assessment area and get a passing grade. So what does that functionally mean? It would be, in our mind, an invitation to a modern-day form of redlining, where a bank has CRA footprint, has assessment areas, and could focus 51% or their efforts in 51% of their assessment area and ignore up to 50% of it. So you could envision a system or how this practically would roll out where banks would invest in gentrifying communities and then ignore the communities that are the most challenged, i.e. creating a modern-day form of redlining. Now, I think it's important to note because I say, well, you know, banks would do this and banks would do that. This is not about the banks and not directing any animus at all about the banks. This is all coming from the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency and their ally, the FDIC, under the leadership of Comptroller Otting. And the banks have been lukewarm to these proposals.
I mean, I know you were just kind of talking about redlining, and I think that's kind of the main issue, at least in my mind, on how we're seeing this modern-day redlining coming about. And looking at a lot of these communities on how this investment, or really not investment, but disinvestment into a lot of these communities and how this is really going to impact these communities, specifically in Ohio. Like, can you speak to anything more about – So if this does go into effect, what would happen to these neighborhoods? Would there be other resources available that could be stepping up to take over this disinvestment that might be happening?
So right before I came here, I was reading an article in Shelter Force entitled No CRA Equals No Community Development. And the entire gist of the article is how pivotal a role that CRA plays in community development. And many times we're talking about first-in money to complicated projects. I'm sitting here in OFA. Of course, none of you are strangers to how complex development deals are. Right. And, you know, CRA plays an integral role in these complicated deals that result in good things, housing, and so forth, from occurring. What you can see from what I mentioned earlier with the three buckets of what counts, how it counts, where it counts, is when you look at it through those lens, you're going to have all of this non-community development, non-community reinvestment activity counted. And where you could envision, they'll still get credit, compliance will be easy. And let me pause there to also say, we need to modernize CRA. But right now, 98% of banks pass their exams, 98%. So we're not talking about a massive problem here. We certainly need to modernize in a world of digital banking and online-only banks, but you know, need to throw that fact out to give some perspective. You know, you've also got where CRA has led banks. Many of our fine Ohio-based institutions here have created very talented community development teams and professionals that work with members members of our organization to make deals go, that is invaluable to just redevelopment, revitalization of these disenfranchised communities. If you make it so easy and you're able to qualify for things like infrastructure and major deals like stadiums, you can potentially see in the future the dismantling of these teams, the de-emphasis of them at the very least. But in the end, what we're talking about is we're talking about less capital, less opportunity, and less equity in lending for the communities that need it most in Ohio and across the country. And it's travesty.
And so who do you think that these changes would really impact throughout Ohio?
You know, our members, and care deeply about our members, but in the end, what we're talking about is the communities they serve, the neighborhoods and the people who live in those communities, where some progress is being made, a lot more progress needs to be made. This is going to reverse decades hard-fought progress and is going to make it much more difficult to revitalize and stabilize communities up and down our state.
Do you know how this will really impact agencies or residents in Ohio? And like, why should individual residents throughout the state really care about the CRA proposed reform?
You know, whether you live in an LMI community or not, I mean, we should all care about, you know, fairness and equity and understand the history of our country. And for those that live in LMI communities, that, you know, capital is the primary ingredient to the American dream. Whether you're talking about a small business, whether you're talking about a healthy commercial corridor for all to benefit, whether you're talking about the opportunity to live in a nice LIHTC development and opportunity to purchase your own home, that American dream will be diminished. And for many, if this dismantling takes effect, you will see less opportunity, more inequity in these communities.
Earlier, you were kind of mentioning that the CRA does need to be modernized. And so you were talking about not only modernizing with the times of digital banking, but what other aspects of the CRA do you think needs to be modernized that may have been missed in this proposed reform?
So the reform speaks to it a little bit, but I think the most obvious area to modernize CRA and to strengthen it is to address online banking and how, yes, we understand that traditional brick-and-mortar banks now have a good deal of their business done through the internet, and then you have institutions that are solely web-based. And so that needs to be taken into account for kind of the hybrid banks, if you will, and then also for the ones who are online only. They need to be brought into the game so that they are, you know, working in the communities where they have a high amount of deposits. There is some language to that, but the CRA goes, well, the reform, I put that in air quotes that you can't see, you know, does so much more and goes so far beyond any of that to make those aspects null and void in terms of being, you know, positive. It's overshadowed by all the other negative aspects of the reform.
So really kind of after a lot of the stuff that we've kind of discussed in this episode, what are some of the major takeaways that you wished everyone would know?
So the most important is, I'm imagining that most folks who are listening to this, you know, care deeply about low-income, disenfranchised communities. And I would urge you, whether you are in the nonprofit or for-profit sector or government sector, to speak out and to make your voice heard. We need to fight against this. Our association certainly is trying to do its part, but we all need to stand up. And so the first thing that you can do is make public comment. If you go to ncrc.org/treasurecra, that's ncrc.org/treasurecra, or our website, ohiocdc.org, you will be directed to resources and templates and other information to allow you to make public comment. The deadline is April 8th, so I would very much encourage you to make comment by the 8th. Additionally, is to raise that awareness. Earlier, Cody, you mentioned, you know, how does this matter to the layperson in a community? And it is, and I mentioned how it is arcane. We need to build awareness. We've been trying to do that in the media. I would encourage folks who care about this issue, if you're active in social media, consider writing a letter to the editor or an opinion editorial to your newspaper. There, I've been encouraged that newspapers and other traditional media have taken an interest in this, even in light of all the other things bombarding us today. So please consider making public comment, and then in other ways, talk the issue up, get the issue out there so that awareness is raised, because that is going to be what turns back this attack, if you will. And I think that's too strong of a word, because it truly is attack on disenfranchised communities.
So, I mean, you were mentioning with this that public comment is open until April 8th, and there are templates available. But what would you, I mean, obviously personalized comments are more powerful than the templates that are provided. So what, I mean, I don't know if you want to provide yours or some examples, but what should people really be saying in these public comments by April 8th?
And that's a good question. If you go to our website, you'll see a couple of templates from NCR, NACEDA, NACEDA.org. It's critically important that if you're going to make public comment, you can use that as a starting point and a way to educate yourselves, but you need to put it in your own voice, especially if you're a nonprofit community developer. You know, think about how bank investments, lending, grants, et cetera, you know, made good things happen in your community, and talk about them in those letters. you know, look at, you know, the examples I gave of what counts, how it counts, where it counts, and think about that through the lens of your community and how that could impact you. But it's important to make public comment, but it's also important to take a little bit of time within your own organization to customize it and put it in your own voice and let it be from your own personal experiences or organizational experiences, that is.
Great. So finally, if you could have everybody read one book, what would it be and why?
Well, first, that's a really tough question. And I just, because I recently finished it, but it'd be Grant by Ron Chernow. And it took me forever. And it's about President Grant and all the way from his early childhood in Georgetown, Ohio, you know, through the Civil War and his presidency and until his death. And you have to write like history. Don't pick it up if you don't like history. But I found it quite interesting to read the book Grant. That's all I got for you, Cody.
All right. Yeah, thank you. So thanks so much for coming in and speaking to us. To my listeners, please be sure to rate, comment, and subscribe to the Doorsteps podcast so you don't miss any updates about housing issues in Ohio. You can also follow the podcast and any other research that the Office of Housing Policy at the Ohio Housing Finance Agency does by following our Twitter account at Ohio Doorsteps. Thanks for listening. I'm Dr. Cody Price, and this is Doorsteps.
Thank you, Cody.